Good afternoon, Bay Area. Welcome to the Sights and Sounds Show with Janae Darden, where every week we tap into the Bay Area art scene and bring you rich conversations with artists. On today's show, we hear from a trio of young Oakland singers, musicians who recently performed at the Kennedy Center. Then an exhibit that celebrates the social justice movements of Filipinos in San Francisco's SoMa district, and a store in Oakland that was named one of the best comic book shops in the world. And they're hosting a big event this weekend. Today's show is about lifting up and loving our community. That's all coming up. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden. Here in the Bay Area, we're so lucky to live in a place with an abundance of super talented local artists like Oakland Rising. That music you hear is from Naima, along with August Lee Stevens and B. DeVoe, and they make up the Gifted Trio. Their music truly lifts people's spirits and reminds us of one of Oakland's treasures. Its culture. Oakland Rising performed at the Kennedy Center earlier this summer, and the group is here in studio to talk to me about the about that experience and their music. And I'm tongue-tied because I'm so excited because they're just so awesome. Welcome, Oakland Rising.
Hey. Hi.
Hey. See, I was so excited. I got all tongue-tied because I was like, Oakland Rising here in the studio. I feel cooler because they're in the studio. Hey. Okay, you all are just awesome, talented young people. Why the name Oakland Rising? I love that name.
Who wants to take it?
Who wants to go first?
I can start. I'm under pressure. Okay.
August, go first.
Yeah, so Oakland Rising is a collective. We're all solo artists, and there's a few other artists. Shout out to Melodious and to Io Brame. But we all came together with the help of Phil Green and the We Follow the Music org, just wanting to highlight how much culture and how much arts and how much community and the positives of Oakland, kind of trying to fight against the stereotypes that a lot of people have about the city that I love, the city that we all love. And just showcase what we're really about. And it's not about the headlines. It's about the people that are here and the movements and the music and everything that we're making.
Yeah. And so you mentioned, and it's We Follow. Is that what?
Follow the Music.
Okay, Follow the Music. Yeah, and so that, and I understand that was put together by Ronnie Lott, the football legend Ronnie Lott, and music icon Sheila E. So they came together with other leaders to form this organization, which gives emerging artists like yourselves opportunities to perform on large platforms like the Kennedy Center. How has being a part of that organization affected you all as artists?
I can go.
Okay.
I think, well, Follow the Music gave me and helped me with the opportunity to perform at Bottle Rock, I guess, like, almost 2 years ago now, or a year and a half ago, and that was just an awesome opportunity and experience, and that was, like, one of the biggest things I've ever done. And then just, like, helping get connections with people and getting gigs, and then really large scale gigs like Kennedy Center, and you know, kind of creating Oakland Rising and just kind of putting all of us artists together and giving us connections and stuff.
And Naeem was only 15.
Yeah.
So you were doing that at 13. You
said, well, 14.
14.
Yeah.
Okay.
So not that long ago, probably less long than I said.
But. Okay. Okay. It's not too many people that perform. You said Bottle Rock? At 14?
And solo, too. You did that all by yourself.
Just me and my guitar.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, it's a lot of people that's much older than you that are dreaming of doing that. Yeah. Anybody else want that beat? You wanted to add something?
Yeah. For me, just to add on to what Naima said, it's been a huge support, not only with, like, gigs and opportunities, but also, you know, some of the, you know, things that aren't necessarily seen. So, like, the back end, you know, maybe, like, before a show, like, we also performed at Mountain Winery and opened for Rhiannon Giddens. And that was an amazing experience. But, you know, just having someone there, like Phil, who, you know, can be there and make sure that we have everything we need before and after, making sure that, you know, we're networking or, you know, helping us, giving us, like, game on the industry as well. And, like, breaking down, you know, contracts or deals or, you know, the best way to go about something. Like, August and I are both independent artists, and I think Naeem is also independent. So, you know, we're all just, like, navigating this kind of on our own or with our families or our small communities. And so I think just having the support of Follow the Music really gives us a stronger foundation to know that, like, we can make these decisions and know that we have somebody we could call and get advice for or anything like that.
And shout out to Phil Green, who's your manager.
Shout out.
From Oakland.
Our fairy godmother.
Yes.
Phil makes everything happen.
Yeah.
And Phil is probably like, don't talk about me because I'm behind the scenes. But he's definitely much a part of the fabric of the music scene here in Oakland and the arts community in the Bay Area as well. Okay, so what was it like to perform at the Kennedy Center? I mean, there was so much. First of all, it was just a whole lot of drama surrounding the Kennedy Center just because what's going on in Washington.
Yeah.
And you all still went there anyway and did your thing. And I watched it. People can watch it on YouTube. And you all were just stunning and just beautiful and just healing.
Thank you.
I was just so moved. I was so proud of you. I was telling Phil, I was like, I feel like auntie. I was like, I'm from Oakland, so to see hear a group called Oakland Rising and just to really showcase, again, like I said in the lead, the beauty of the culture of Oakland. I was just so proud. So what was it like for y'all to do that, to be on that stage?
What order do you
I mean, right? For me, it was awesome, obviously. And it was just great to play with B and August. We never performed as a trio really before that.
Okay.
So that was, we kind of like, were like kind of thrown into it, but we came together and we did it. And it was, it was really fun. And I'd never been to DC before either.
Oh,
so it was kind of a little like trip for me.
Yeah, that's a big trip.
And the people there were really nice. And I think, and just like, going and showing up in that space, we kind of decided like it's better to go than not go, really, and to like speak with our music. And that's kind of the point of Oakland Rising, is to show people what Oakland can do and like the culture of Oakland and the music.
Nice. August, you want to add something?
Yeah, I mean, echoing everything Naima said, it was meaningful on a lot of fronts, like on a personal front, and just as an artist, it for me was a big stepping stone. This is one thing to perform and write my music and have the intentions that I want to have with it. But there's difference between like performing in Oakland, where I know a lot of people have the same mindset and the same ideologies as me, than performing in a place that was at the time and right now so charged and like politically influenced and in that conversation. And so even going into it with everything that we were considering, there were still some nerves, but if I want to write to events, and if I want to write to like different truths or what I think is important, it means a lot to have that opportunity to kind of step into those spaces where I'm not comfortable and might not even really be welcomed or wanted. So that was a big moment for me. And then also just from like the artist standpoint, being able to perform with Bea and Naima, there were lots of moments on the stage where it just felt like this. I was able to get lost in the music. I was able to bond and connect with them.
I sensed that.
Yeah, it was just like there was so much heart in a lot of it. So it was meaningful on different fronts for me. Yeah.
What about you, B?
It was amazing. All the things that have been said, I concur. Also, I think like it was a huge push. I had just finished Co-Founders, the musical, as the understudy for their lead role, and then went directly into rehearsals with August and Naima for this performance. And so it felt like a never-ending train. And we were even on a train during this trip from New York to D.C.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was also just kind of awesome to just kind of like be in the like the what's the word?
The momentum
of like just having a band, needing to do this gig, needing to like make sure it's amazing because it's the Kennedy Center, and then also like trusting these artists that like we've not done this before, but like we kind of had to really lean on each other and lock in, like we say, to really like make it all happen. And I was just so proud of how it came together. I cried on stage, never do that literally ever. So that was just I feel like some things happened that have never happened before in my life on that stage. My family from DC was able to come and see us perform, and so that was also really special. I just feel really blessed, and I also feel like it was necessary for DC's community to have something like that at that time. I'm glad that we went.
And are you all Oakland School for the Arts alums or students?
I went there for middle school, so alum.
Okay. So because that school, I mean, it's so many talented people. That's how I was introduced to B. DeVoe, who was on the show, on the Sights and Sound Show with Janae Darden last week. So welcome back.
Thank you.
And I remember when I saw you perform, and I've seen other students perform, and I'm like, I feel like I'm at Yoshi's. You know? And this is a student show. I mean, you all are just so amazingly talented. Okay, thanks. So let's give the listeners a sample from each of you of how y'all threw down on the stage.
Yes, all right.
You know, you all did your thing on the stage. So at the Kennedy Center, what I like what you all did was just you took turns singing lead and singing backup for each other. So you shared the spotlight, right? Mm-hmm. And you all played, you know, backup music for each other. So I'm going to play a song that each of you sang lead, and then we'll talk about each song. Okay, so first... Okay, August, we'll start with you. Oh, August Lee. Because okay. August is so eager to go first. And so this is from your latest single, Tell Me. Mm-hmm. So let's listen to a clip of that.
Okay.
All these visions of violence in my head, it's twisted. Oh, oh, oh. Tell me honestly how. Dream if you don't listen. Well, I've tried to change your mind, but I think it's sweet. Ooh. No apologies, I really want you to care. Oh, tell me something, change it right now. No protection. Breaking me down, time keeps taking, there's no price we can pay, yeah. Oh, tell me something, change it right now, no protection, breaking me down, time keeps taking, there's no price we can pay.
Okay, so that was Tell Me, a clip of Tell Me by August Lee Stevens. So tell us, what inspired that song?
This song is really kind of me exploding. I just feel like there was a lot happening in the world and a lot happening in my life, and I felt so isolated and kind of crazy because it didn't feel like anyone was talking about it anymore. And I fall prey to this too, where I just get apathetic and like kind of retreat. Mm-hmm. But then it felt like everybody was in that state of mind. And if that's the case, if we're like turning off of all of our emotions and the ability to talk to one another when it's hard, then I think like we failed. So that's kind of what the song is about, is like, please someone just tell me that I'm not the only one feeling this way. Yeah. And like, let's keep the conversation going, even though it's hard. Like, we're going to have to just kind of get over that and just push harder and talk and all of that.
Yeah. No, I definitely felt that.
Yeah.
You know, when I listened to the song, it was like a call, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a call to action, really. And it's for me too. Like, I need to do better also. So it's for everybody. Yeah.
That's good when like when you see yourself in your art, you know, challenging yourself as an artist to create, but also to the message, to live according to the message. All right. So, and that's your latest single, so people can get that.
Yeah. So it's out everywhere.
Yes. And buy the music.
Yeah, Bandcamp.
Please, support Bandcamp. Support these young artists. Okay. So, Naima, 15.
Hi.
Let's hear what Naima was talking. Naima went up there with her guitar, was not playing. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, no. Let's play Naiva's song.
Mother, daughter, sister, lover, and all things in between. Created for you to love and adore you and take care of everything. Working twice as hard for half as much in everything you do. Just sit still, look pretty and brave, a smile, don't let the world see through. So you wonder why it's making us so mad, 'cause you could be the perfect woman, but you'll never be the man. It feels like we're going back in time, 'cause you might control my body, but you can't control my mind.
listened to that song, Naima, I said, that sound like Janae at 35. And I said, Naima's 15. That's a woman that's been through some stuff. Yeah. And, you know, and young people are observing, right? Yeah. And y'all been through stuff, too. So what inspired you to write that? And this is all the music they performed is their own original music. So what inspired that song? I was like, wow.
Well, that song, I think I started writing it the day after election day.
Okay.
But I mean, just, I don't know, I was kind of just thinking about, at least in my opinion, like what it is to be a woman and the struggles that all women face. And that, yeah, that's a really vulnerable song for me. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of debating whether or not to sing it at the Kennedy Center, but I was like, what's a better place to sing this song than at the Kennedy Center right now? So I played it. But yeah, I think just kind of, I mean, you might control my body, but you can't control my mind. I feel like that kind of says it all. Like, no matter what, I don't know, the government or whoever or your family, friends, whatever other people are telling you, like, they can't control your brain. They can't control your soul and your spirit. So
finding your freedom. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was like, wow. And then a part of me felt like, I was like, I hate that at that age, like that even has to be an issue, you know, for yeah. you and also, you know, you all too, for all of us, you know, some of those issues you raise as far as with gender inequality. And that was very courageous of you to sing that song, mm-hmm. too.
Thank
yeah.
you.
First time, and not that you haven't sang at other big platforms, but to sing that song at the Kennedy Center.
Yeah, so. I was a little scared, but.
but you pushed through. You pushed
yeah.
through.
Yes.
Yes. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with artists B. DeVoe, August Lee Stevens, and Naima. They make up the group Oakland Rising, and you can watch their Kennedy Center performance on the Kennedy Center's YouTube channel. And I want to play a clip of B. DeVoe's performance too as well. So let's hear what B. DeVoe did.
Don't stop. Keep going. Don't stop. Don't stop. No. No. Keep going. Don't stop. Hey, don't stop. No.
That song, and I loved hearing you all doing the backup singing too. That song felt like a mantra. Like, that's the song I'd put in my head, like when I want to give up. And I just could hear your voice saying, keep going. You know, we just have a couple minutes left. What inspired that song, B?
For me, you know, I was definitely in the depths. I feel like similarly to August, it was like a cry for help. I hadn't picked up my guitar in months. And then I finally sat down and found these simple chord progression. I think it's like G, C major, D major, something like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they just rang a little differently in my ears that day. And then this mantra, as you said, came through. And yeah, it was also during the time I was recording my album. So I was like, oh my God, do I need to put this song on the album? And it is on the album. So if you like it, you can hear it on the album. But yeah, it really was like a mantra for me and a reminder for me and hopefully for others to like never give up. Don't throw in the towel no matter what our reality might tell us, you know?
Yeah.
Just to keep going.
Wow. So we have about a minute left or a minute and a half left. What do you all have coming up next?
We will be at OMCA, Oakland Museum. On October 18th.
Yep.
And it's going to be an event that I think is going to be like focused on youth and just giving back to the Oakland youth community. But also it's all ages, so feel free to join us. We'll be sharing some of our original music.
Nice.
Yeah, doing a set as a band and really just giving back to the youth, connecting with them.
Yeah, so people got to wait till October to see you all, you know, together. This, you know, the name of the group, Oakland Rising, and going back to just some of the drama coming out of Washington, there's been a lot of criticism of Oakland. Often when Oakland makes headlines, it's not positive, even though there's so much great stuff and people that come out of Oakland like yourselves. And I know you're originally August from Hercules. Right.
Yeah.
Studied in Oakland.
Yeah.
I just want to give a shout out to Hercules.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just wanted to ask you, what do you love or like about Oakland? Let's end on that note. And we got 1 minute.
I love the people in Oakland. Yeah. That's it. The people.
Okay, Naima.
The music, the creatives, the vibrancy. It's nonstop. Even with all the gentrification, we still thrive and we're still here.
It just feels like a heartbeat when you're in Oakland. It's like the pulse of the Bay Area.
So, oh, wow.
That's mic drop.
We just might go in the show and go home.
Yeah.
We have other guests, August. Well, again, I thought you all were just beautiful and magical on that stage. And I'm so excited for you. And I'm so excited for your just future careers in music. And you all come back anytime. Because I know you all are working on something. So, and thanks just for putting out just beautiful music. Just some positive, just beautiful music. Thanks for doing that.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for having us and highlighting artists and just
shout out to KALW.
August Lee Stevens, B. DeVoe, and Naima make up the group Oakland Rising. And you can watch their Kennedy Center performance on the Kennedy Center's YouTube channel. And we'll have a link on our website. Get August Lee Stevens' new single, Tell Me, and B's albums, Chrysalis, on Bandcamp. And you can see B tomorrow in San Francisco for a free lunchtime performance at the Yerba Buena Gardens. 12:30. All right. Coming up, art and history come together at an exhibit about Filipinos' fight for justice in San Francisco and the Bay Area. Stay with us. You're listening to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden. There's a long history of social justice movements by San Francisco's Filipino community. Yerba Buena Center for the Arts is honoring this history in the exhibit Makibaka, A Living Legacy. Much of the artwork focuses on movements in the Soma neighborhood spanning generations. And the exhibit is multimedia with paintings, photos, videos, textile, and more. And here to share more about the museum is one of the exhibit's co-curators, Trisha Lagasso Goldberg. Hey, Trisha, welcome.
Hey, Janae.
I'm so happy that you're here. Profiro, our Sights and Sounds producer, and I, we went and looked at the exhibit. And there's so much to learn. There's so much to learn. And you co-created this with the organization District Soma Pilipinas.
That's right.
Just want to give a shout out to them.
Mm-hmm.
Makibaka, Living Legacy. That's the name of the exhibition. What does Makibaka mean?
Yeah, it's a good question. Makibaka means to defy, to resist, to struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And within the context of this exhibition, I think, just to kind of back up a little bit, I think this is a moment where, you know, it's a troubled moment, you know, in time. Mm-hmm. It's a time of war. It's a time of genocide. It's a time of climate disaster. It's a time of struggle.
Yeah.
So I think that the not just the title, but what Makibaka represents, it's not an accident, right, that we titled the exhibition and this is the theme of the show. It's also a rallying cry, so it's something that you say in a protest. So that's really the spirit that we're bringing to Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. The upstairs galleries are activated with 22 artists, most of them from the Bay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, I was born and raised in the Bay Area, and I didn't learn about Filipino activism until I went to college. I was an ethnic studies major, so that's when I learned. Did you know about this history in Soma, you know, years ago, or where did you learn? Because so many, I think so many people don't even sometimes may not even associate with, you know, Filipinos with activism, especially when we look at API communities, that history doesn't get told much.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. And that's what we, if there's one thing that visitors take away from this exhibition, we hope it's that they learn about the deep history of activism and organizing in the Bay Area led by Filipinos, and not just Filipinos working in solidarity with other communities.
Yeah.
And to the question of how I learned about it, so I'm from Hawaii originally, and I moved to the Bay in the 90s to go to school. So I went to SFAI, and there I met my mentor, Carlos Villa. So I organized an exhibition about Carlos as an artist, an educator, an activist who was born and raised in San Francisco in the TL. And he taught at the San Francisco Art Institute, RIP, where I went to school. So I organized that exhibition for the Asian Art Museum a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And Carlos was really the first person to introduce me to that history of the Third World Liberation Front, right? Mm-hmm. So this is between Cal, you know, University of California, Berkeley, and SFSU, between the two campuses, or students organized across the Bay and advocated and demanded from their administration that the curriculum be diversified and reflect more their lived experiences. So that was really my introduction. That was in the 90s. And since then, you know, I have pledge my allegiance to the Filipino-American community here in the Bay, which I think is really unique. I mean, and I do think it's in part because of the work that's done between cultures and in solidarity with other communities. So Carlos,
which I noticed that in the exhibit too.
Yeah. You know, so like Carlos worked, as an example, you know, with a lot of Black artists, and the international hotel struggle, which is featured as part of the exhibition, and many of the artists in Makibaka look to the I Hotel moment, which is in 1977. There was, a major kind of explosive moment in San Francisco history where I forget what it is, like 400 riot cops,
right,
you know, showed up to this
the International Hotel.
You got it. Yeah. And it was a residence for a lot of immigrants, right?
Mm-hmm. And elders.
And a lot of elders, immigrant elders, Filipino and Chinese primarily, and, you know, and others mixed in there who came together. So there were 3,000 protesters, and they were not only Filipino and Chinese, right? These are folks from across the Bay, from every walk of life, who were working, you know, linked arms literally in to protect this housing, this home,
right,
for so many.
I guess the city wanted to, or some developers, they wanted to tear it down.
That's right. To demolish, which they did eventually. It's a very, and you know, that moment was a lightning rod moment in the history of Bay Area housing that reverberated throughout the nation. So it had an impact beyond our shores and helped to shape the thinking around housing policy and for renters, right? So not folks who own necessarily. A lot of the Filipino families who live in the South of Market district are renters. So how do we provide housing protection for these housing insecure communities, right?
And it's, you know, and these issues are still going on today. And the exhibit includes 120 years of Filipino history in San Francisco's Soma neighborhood. And there's housing rights, immigrant rights, labor rights. And I was just like, man, so much to include. I love there's a panel where you can just kind of go. And I know you couldn't put everything in there because it's so much. But there was a panel on the wall where you could just look at different decades and see, you know, what was happening and what the resistance looked like. If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with educator Tricia Lagasso-Goldberg. She's a co-curator of the exhibit Makibaka, A Living Legacy, and is currently on display at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts until January 2026. Something I noticed in the exhibit, well, I noticed a lot of things, but one thing I noticed was there were a lot of photos of people in the community. And some of the photos were vintage, some of them, you know, current photos. And I thought it was interesting that you all had the faces, you know, not just faces of like big prominent leaders, but just the faces of everyday people in this community, in this neighborhood. Why did you want to include the faces in the community, from the community, in this exhibit?
because they are the community, right? I mean, it's a little, it's not more than a shout out. I think it's, you know, we can talk about these big issues that are super important, housing, language rights, social justice, but who are the real people that struggle on the day-to-day? Who are we talking about? Yeah. So I think it was really important to Soma Pilipinas, who they had reached out to me as an independent curator to help them to give shape to this exhibition. Soma Pilipinas was founded in 2016 as a city and state recognized cultural and heritage district, Filipino culture and heritage district of San Francisco. So they really have led the way, and they fiercely believe that the community is not, you know, these kind of, not just policy, there are real people and histories, personal histories that are embedded in these histories, that make up these histories. So one of the organizations that's represented in, I think that you're referring to, in Makibaka is SAMCAN. So that's the South of Market Community Action Network, which is another, you know, crucial, critical organization that it works as an advocacy organization and organizes youth and other community members around issues like housing and language justice, et cetera. So that kind of, there's a corner called Maki's Corner as part of Makibaka that's activated with what I refer to as a kind of refrigerator moment, where it's like you're in someone's home or you're in a community center and you see, you know, just an entire surface or a door or, you know, a wall covered in snapshots. And that these are the moments that we document of ourselves, right? So we are the documentarians of our own history. We are the authors of our own history. So I really feel like that giving the agency to the community to picture themselves and not just, you know, rely on, I don't know, like an official voice or an authority kind of perspective or camera view to document what you're doing. What we do matters and on the everyday. So there's a lot of photography, but it is a contemporary art exhibition. So there's, you know, photography in the Contemporary Art Gallery, Gallery 3 upstairs. Irina Alejo is one of the artists, contemporary artists that's included in that part of the presentation. And they worked with students in the South of Market neighborhood after school. So, and all of the photos that Irina included as part of their installation were taken by those youth.
And I said, I know those kids are so excited that their photos on display. And I like what you said too about that part of the exhibit where it feels like you're in a community center, because that's what I felt when I was in the corner, like looking at those pictures. I just thought that was interesting. I said, wow, they have a lot of faces of the community here. I want to talk about another piece by Christine Blanco, and it's called Embedded Bricks. That was one of my favorite pieces. And it's bricks and dirt arranged like a quilt. And from a distance, I was like, is that a checkerboard? Then I got closer, I was like, is it like, again, like a quilt? And it's arranged in something, and correct me if I'm wrong, called kusikas?
Kusikus.
Okay, a spiral, which means to ward off harm. And I loved it because the residents of Soma, they carved in words of protection on the bricks. And can you talk about this work and how other pieces kind of bring in ritual and culture from the Philippines and bring them into these works here in San Francisco and combine that with resistance? I just like that balance there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm so glad that you brought up that piece by Christine Blanco. We did a call for, so a couple ways in which artists were included in this exhibition. One, they were invited and curated in by Soma Pilipinas and myself, and we did a call for artists. So these are, you know, it was open to anyone, and we selected artwork that was submitted through that call. Christine had submitted to the call, and what you're describing is, so it's a framed, it's framed with wood, and it's about 3 feet by 3 feet, you know, a square on the floor. And inside of this wood frame are these clay pieces that Christine actually worked with in a workshop with South of Market residents to, and asked them, the prompt was, what would you like to protect? And the pattern that you're referring to is a traditional Filipino textile pattern referred to as kusikus or binakal. And it is this kind of really recognizable kind of, it looks like a kind of 60s psychedelic pattern. And it is meant to kind of trick the evil spirits and as a means of protection, right? So the artist is using that pattern and the bricks that I believe were formed from clay that was extracted from the earth in Soma, and the soil that fills in the blanks, you know, in this pattern making between the bricks, is also from Yerba Buena Gardens.
Okay.
So Soma Pilipinas really felt strongly when they gave me my assignment on what they wanted the exhibition to be about. Mm-hmm. They really wanted to focus it on Soma.
Okay.
You know, it is a love letter to south of Market, to this district. I mean, it's also many other things. It's a container for grief and rage and resistance and struggle, you know, on behalf of the community and opposition to erasure and attempts at displacement and erasure. It's all of these things. And that, I feel like Christine Blanco's piece is helping as a protective measure to protect against those things, to ward against it, right? There are other works in the exhibition, as you've mentioned, that use, kind of traditional forms. Mm-hmm. And one is in front of the museum. So it's Mark Busasaki's.
Yes.
Yeah. So the lighthouse. Yeah. I don't know if you had another question.
No, I was going to say, because we have about a minute left. Okay. I know this is going by fast. But yes, talk about that, please.
Yeah. So when you enter Yerba Buena Center for the Arts on Mission through the doors there is a work by Mark Busasaki called Lighthouse. And it's a contemporary take on a traditional Filipino a structure called a Bahay Kubo or a Nipa hut, right? Mm-hmm. Which typically is made out of natural materials. Mark has created this contemporary version out of stainless steel.
Yes.
And the roof of this structure, cut out in the roof, is that same pattern. So the kusikus or binakal pattern that Christine Blanco uses in this sculpture installation upstairs is cut into the rooftop of this structure. And as the sun passes overhead, you can see the binakal pattern projected on the ground. And it's activated at night with video from the Sam Tagatak archive.
Yeah, mm-hmm. we saw that, Porfirio and I, and it was really like, wow. It blew us away. I was like, this went by so quickly because I had like a ton of other questions. But I'm about to ask you after the show goes out. For listeners, make sure when you go to the exhibit to look at the sledgehammer. That was also another. They're all really moving pieces, but that was another piece. Sledgehammer by Weston Teruya.
Teruya.
Okay, Teruya. Mm-hmm. And it commemorates the eviction of people from the I Hotel in 1977. And the sheriff at the time, he used a sledgehammer to break down the doors of the residence at the I Hotel. And so he accented with like some Filipino symbols and small art pieces. And then I just we can't get into it because we have to go. But I just encourage you all, when you go to the exhibit, make sure that you check that out. Trisha Lagasso Goldberg, thank you so much.
Thank you, Janae.
Yes.
What an honor to be here.
I'm glad you were here. I'm glad you made it. Trisha Lagasso Goldberg is the co-curator of the exhibit Makibaka, A Living Legacy, and it runs at San Francisco's Yerba Buena Center for the Arts until January 2026. And next up, not all heroes wear capes. Some of them host free comic book conventions in the East Bay. Keep it locked right here. Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds show with me, Janae Darden. If you're a regular listener of this show, you might already know that the Sights and Sounds team, we're kind of geeky. We love going to comic cons and dressing up as characters. And the Bay Area comic scene is rich with great artists, and you can see some of them this Sunday at Cape and Cal Con, and is organized by Oakland's Cape and Cal Comics. In 2023, the comic book store was honored as the best comic book store in the world at Comic Con in San Diego. Yes, Oakland has the best comic book store in the world. all the fun at Cape and Cal Con is going down at Faction Brewing in Alameda. Shout out to Alameda. And it's free. And here to talk more about that event is Cape and Cal Comics owner, Eitan Manoff. Eitan, hello.
Hello.
So happy you are here. And we love your store, too, as well. So Cape and Cow has done so much. You expanded the store during the pandemic and gave free comics to kids when the first Black Panther movie came out. And you all are still around. A lot of stores did not survive the pandemic. Did doing that help you survive the pandemic?
I think that probably did. You know, I've always felt that like giving back to the community is something you do because you can. Mm-hmm. But additionally, like people like it and they like to support places that do these kind of things. So I think the fact that we are trying to be out there and try and give back because we're able to have like the best job ever really kind of makes an impression on people.
Yeah, yeah. And okay, I know people appreciated that. Now that was all over the news. So I'm happy that you all gave back to the community and that you're still around. So in 2023, you won the Will Eisner Spirit of Comics Retail Award, and the award honors the best comic book stores in the world. And I was telling Eitan earlier, that is a big crown to wear. With great power comes great responsibility. if you follow Spider-Man, you know what I'm talking about. So what makes Cape and Cow stand out, where y'all got the best award and you're the best in the world?
Yeah, I mean, we're basically Spider-Man. Like you said, that's all it takes. You just I think I think a lot of it is the community stuff that we do. And I think a lot of it is just our core philosophy that we have comics for everyone. Mm-hmm. And that's, anybody who walks into this store can see themselves in the comics that we have on display and that we carry and that we care about.
Yeah.
And that, you know, fortunately for us, that comes very naturally, right? We just want everybody to be included, but it's not as common as it should be.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a big part of it. And I think our store is just like really, really pretty.
It is. It is. Helps. And I've gone to your store and seen people cosplaying just to go to your store. So you definitely have a community there. How did it feel to win that honor?
It was unreal. I mean, really kind of an out-of-body experience. You know, we had actually been, it was our fourth time being a finalist for the award. So every year there's five or six finalists. And we were nominated four times. We were finalists four times. And finally on the fourth time, we won, and it was wild. I went up on the stage and I gave a speech that I don't hardly remember. My daughter was playing softball in another city, and I was just like, man, it's nice to be here with all of you, but I really kind of wish I was sweating my face off at this softball game. And I held up my phone and I had the whole room of 1,000 comics professionals say good luck Parker and recorded it and sent it to her.
Oh, that's so sweet. Shout out to Parker. Oh, that's
shout
so
out to
sweet
Parker.
Yeah. Oh, so that's nice that you held space for your daughter and also to celebrated yourself too as well. So what, like, when you get that kind of honor, how does that impact your business? Did that boost your business or just gave you bragging rights?
Yeah bragging rights are nice. I think it elevated the profile of our business within the industry, which has benefits that definitely trickle down to business. You know, comic book creators and publishers and things know who you are and want to involve you in their plans and kind of be in front of your customers. Mm-hmm. And certainly, like, immediately following winning the award, like, everybody wanted to come in and kind of be part of the good vibes and congratulate us and give us high fives. And so we definitely saw a boost then. And then, yeah, I think it just kind of raised the profile.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so not that you're not busy enough, you guys decided to host a con. Why?
Well, we need one. We need a good one here in the Bay Area.
And because I'm like, it's other cons that come to the Bay. So what are you saying?
Yeah, but we need a good one that comes to the Bay.
Ooh, ooh, those fighting words.
I'm just kidding.
No, but like, what stands out about this con? And
well, this one is very comics and comic book creator, artist and writer focused. You know, I think the cons that we have coming to the Bay Area now, which are, they're a lot of fun, but they're very like celebrity focused, right? It's like, go get your picture taken with William Shatner, go get your picture taken with this person from The Walking Dead or
and
whatever.
Pay like $400.
Yeah, pay a whole lot of money to like stand next to somebody for 30 seconds. Not what I would do, but people are super into it. And then you go down to the sales floor and it's a lot of like, I went to one last year and I swear there was three people selling Crocs charms, which like, I love Crocs, but if I go to Comic-Con, you know, like one person selling Croc charms is probably enough. And then I want to see more comics around.
Yeah.
So we wanted to do something here in the Bay that was more comics focused and more community focused.
Mm-hmm. And I know too, that's been a complaint for people that go to cons that they feel like it is too Hollywood and these cons have drifted away from the artist. So what's the agenda? Like what's the layout for Cape and Cal Con? Like, would there be panels or people just would be able to mingle with artists? Like, what can people expect?
Yeah, we were going to add panels this year. So this is our third year and we've moved to a larger venue. We're out at Faction Brewing, like you said, in Alameda, which is a really great big space out on the Naval Base. And and they do have an area that we thought we would use for programming, but the response of people who wanted to be involved in the con and share their art and be that kind of stuff was so strong. We were like, no, we have to take that space and have more people involved.
Okay.
So really, this is about, yeah, connecting with artists, with creators, with makers, with resellers, with your other fans. So it's indoors and outdoors. Inside, you have primarily 55 professional comics creators, and then another 20 plus people getting their start or doing things completely independently. And then outside, there's another 60 booths of people selling all kinds of interesting stuff.
Okay. So definitely a way to support local artists. And it looks like all different type of items people can check out. So you've had you will be having some artists who were actually guests on my show. Jessica Fong. Wahab Algarmi, Sean Harris, and Mark Barnett. Shout out to Benjamin Sue. I haven't interviewed him yet. I'm trying to, but I know he does great work with Marvel and Pixar. Who are some other artists we should look out for at Cape and Cal Con?
Well, locals, we have Tin Pham and Brianna Lowenstone, who are both incredible cartoonists, make graphic novels. They're actually both teachers at Bishop O'Dowd.
Oh, nice.
And Tin has won an Eisner Award himself for his first graphic novel. So,
oh, wow.
Those are a couple more locals I'm excited about. I'm bringing in Rick Remender is a big comic book writer. He's been kind of a big star in comics for the last 30 years. And he wanted to come out. He wrote a comic with the comedian Brian Posehn called Grommets, which is about skaters in Sacramento in the 80s. And it's hilarious and so much fun and very Bay Area. So we reached out to those guys and said, you got to come here and be part of this. So,
oh, that's
but
nice.
You know, I'm lucky. I'm the one who gets to ask everybody to come. So I'm excited for everybody.
Yeah. So you got a party going on and somebody I'm excited about, and I forgot her name, but she voices Jubilee in the X-Men 97 series. So you have some people too, that are like voice actors and just different types of talent in comics.
Yeah. Holly Chow is coming. She's the voice of Jubilee. We met at Comic-Con or something. She is just the coolest person.
Nice.
And so she needed to be here because she's the best. Yeah. So everybody needs to meet her.
You know, there's so many great, comic book artists here in the Bay Area. What does that say about like just, you know, how Bay Area artists have contributed to the comic industry? What does that say about the artistry here?
Yeah, the Bay Area comic scene has deep roots, important roots, you know, back to the 60s and underground comics in San Francisco and Berkeley and the East Bay. And now it's really incredible that we have so many people here because it's, you know, they're artists, right? It's hard to make your living making comics and it's hard enough to live in the Bay Area doing anything. So it's, the roots are strong here, and we still have a really vibrant scene all throughout the Bay.
And we have to go, A-Tab, but one quick question. Who's your favorite superhero? I'm just curious.
Oh, Oh, well, I'm a big Batman guy.
I figured that because Cape and Cow.
Yeah, big Batman. Grew up primarily Superman, but, you know, as I got older, as I matured, I came to appreciate Batman a
yes,
little bit more.
Yes, yes. Well, I can't do a Batman imitation. I think I did that. I walked in you guys' store, and I was like, hello. And I was trying to talk like Bruce Wayne. And
that's
you all, they're so nice. They went with it, and it was horrible. But they went with it, and we were all talking like Batman and had these horrible invitations. Eitan, thank you so much for coming on. I wish you luck this weekend. Much, much good luck this weekend at your con. I know it's going to be a lot of fun.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Eitan Manoff is the owner of Cape and Cow Comics in Oakland. Take the kids, take the grandkids, take the kids at heart, the big kid in you. Take them to Cape and Cow Con at Faction Brewing in Alameda this Sunday, August 24th. And that's all the time we have for the Sights and Sounds Show with Janae Darden. Thank you to our show producer, Porfirio Rango, our board operator, Damian Miner, and our director of audio programming, David Boyer. And thank you for tuning in. And I know we've been talking about donating to KLW just because with, you know, everything going on, and to help us to continue bring you great content, great interviews, great stories, great music. So again, you can go to klw.org/donate, and we'll have another great show for you right here next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Until then, be good to yourselves, be good to each other, take care of each other, look out for each other.